Sports fans know that not being able to see makes things hard. Like when you're sitting behind people at the stadium who keep standing up on every play, and you have to keep yelling, down in front, down in front. Or when your left tackle misses his block and your quarterback gets blindsided, that's not good. Or when the referee totally misses a clear foul in the box and you have to yell, open your eyes, ref, you're missing a good game. Or when the team that loses hands a cell phone to the ref as he leaves the field. And they say, this phone must be yours. It says 13 missed calls. Tommy Bell is a member of a church in Kentucky, and he's also an NFL referee. He tells this story of when Fred Arbanis was playing for the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl one year. And Arbanis got hit so hard on one play, it knocked his glass eye out. And the eye rolled over to referee Tommy Bell. And as Arbanis picked up his eye and began to clean it off, the referee said, Fred, you only have one eye? You don't have two eyes? You play football with one eye? I had no idea. How in the world? What are you doing playing football? He said, what if something happens to your good eye? What would you do then? And as Fred Arbanis put his glass eye back in, he said, well, sir, if that happened and I go blind, I guess I could always become a referee. But it's not just sports fans. We all know that when you can't see, you're at a great disadvantage in life. Which leads us to today's story, the day Jesus did one of his most amazing miracles ever, one of his most amazing things. And I know it doesn't make much sense to rank miracles because we can't do any of them, but if we were going to rank them, this might be one of Jesus's top 10. John chapter 9, verse 1 says, as Jesus went along, he saw a man blind from birth. Think about that. He was born blind. This man never saw his parents' faces. He never saw any face. He never saw a great sunset. He never saw stars. He never saw green. He never saw. Verse 2, Jesus' disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? So most people don't wear I am blind from birth name tags. So the 12 must have known about this guy somehow. Maybe everybody in town knew about this man blind from birth. Maybe one of the 12 was a childhood friend of this man and they knew he'd been blind from birth. Maybe somebody had tripped over him as he was begging at the temple the day before and they found out, oh, this guy's been here for a long time. He's blind from birth. We don't know how, but they knew that he had been blind his whole life. And like us, the disciples wondered, why does that happen? Why do bad things happen to good people, even to babies? What's up with that? So they asked Jesus, because Jesus was full of good answers. They said, Jesus, what went wrong here? And Jesus said, like he often does, something interesting, but different than what you're expecting. Jesus said, you guys are asking the wrong question. The better question to ask now is who can make what's wrong right again? In verse 3, it says, Jesus said, neither this man nor his parents sinned, but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. As long as it's day, Jesus said, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I'm in the world, I am the light of the world. Jesus says the work of God, which, by the way, is a good thing to be in on, the work of God is all about reversing what's wrong in the world. The work of God is about returning creation to how the Creator intended it to be. And a lifetime of not being able to see anything is exactly opposite of what God intended for this guy. This guy has suffered a lot his whole life, but Jesus is going to turn that totally around. Turns out Jesus is the light of the world, and the works of God were going to be displayed through this man's blindness. In fact, I bet you that this guy, this blind man, is still thanking Jesus today for the privilege of being in this story. So Jesus spits on the ground, mixes up a little Play-Doh, spreads it over the man's eyes. I think he did that just to make sure that the people watching knew this was no accident. And then Jesus tells this guy, go wash in one of the local public fountains. Now, there are a lot of guesses why Jesus told him to do that. Maybe Jesus was testing him to see if he really trusted Jesus to be able to heal him. Maybe Jesus was just trying to get this guy to, maybe he was training him to obey him. so that this guy would learn to do whatever Jesus said, no matter how strange that seemed. Maybe Jesus was prefiguring baptism here and saying, water and me healing people go together. I know a guy, Roger Chambers, who said he knew some people who suffered from soteriological hydrophobia. Soteriological hydrophobia, a mortal fear of combining salvation with water. But that is not Jesus. In verse 7, Jesus told this man, go, wash in the pool of Siloam, a word that means sent. So the man went and washed and came home seeing. I don't know, maybe Jesus told this guy to do this because the guy's face was messed up with mud. And Jesus thinks cleanliness is next to godliness, and he says, just go wash that off. Or maybe Jesus made the blind man go to the pool because he knows it's going to be his last blind walk ever. One last time, he says, why don't you just make your way through the darkness, because you're not going to have to anymore. And Jesus also knew that when the man came back, that would be his first ever not blind walk, and he would get to see everything that he passed by. Plus, lots of people would see him, seeing things. Whatever the purpose in sending this guy to the pool for healing, Jesus sends him, and the man goes and dunks his face in the pool, or maybe he jumps in, and when he comes up out of the pool, can you even begin to imagine what this guy felt as he sees things for the first time ever? He sees buildings, and he sees the sky, and he sees trees, and he sees people, and he sees his own hands, and he says, oh, that's what skin looks like. And he says, oh, those must be clouds. And what's that? Is that red or yellow? I don't know, but I love it. Can you imagine this man's joy? Shouting, jumping, running, staring, running up to people and staring right at him because he could? You know that he ran to his house, right, so he could see his parents? But I bet he got lost on the way, because he didn't know what the road to his house looked like. I bet he had to stop several times and close his eyes and say, now, which way would I usually turn? Yes, that way. Let's go that way. He was so happy he could see. And on that day, life became brand new for him. I'm guessing this blind man in John chapter 9 just smiled and smiled and smiled as he looked at everything for the first time. Jesus had done a thing that could not be done. He had given sight to a man born blind. And you'd think that'd be a really good thing, right? You'd think people would celebrate that, right? But no. Some people who had seen him begging before, they saw him seeing things, and they said, wow, that guy looks just like the blind guy who's always begging for money down by the temple. And another person said, ooh, I think it is the blind guy. And the first guy said, it couldn't be. And the guy said, sure looks like him. And the first guy says, right, but this guy's not blind, so it can't be him. At which point, the ex-blind man said, looked right at him and said, it's me. And the healed man said, I was once blind, but now I see. And they said, like, how do you do that? And the man said, somebody called Jesus, put mud on my eyes, and he told me to go wash it off, and I'd be cured. And somebody said, I see. And the guy goes, no, I see. Jesus made it so that I can see. And people wanted to talk to Jesus, because if he did that, they were interested. And the guy said, I don't know where he is. In fact, I wouldn't recognize him if I saw him. But he said, if I did see him, I'd see him, because I can see. So they took this newly seeing man, this guy who's brand new at seeing, they took him to the religious leaders, because that's what you do when a miracle happens and you don't know what else to do. And the leader said, okay, blind guy, what's your story? And the guy said, well, this morning I couldn't see, but now I can. And the difference between then and now is that Jesus fixed what was broken in me. And they said, wrong. He said, wrong? They said, wrong. Jesus is a bad dude. He does things he should not do on Sabbath days. And the guy said, well, I'm thinking you probably wouldn't say that if you were me. And they said, how do we even know that you're really blind in the first place? So they called the guy's parents in, and they said, do you know this man? Was he blind? If so, how can he not be blind now? And his parents, not wanting to make the religious leader mad, said, well, yes on the son thing, and yes on the blind thing, and no idea on the cure. So they called the son back in, and they said, it can't, you're wrong. It can't be right. Explain it to us again. which is kind of cool, right? Because that morning, this guy is begging outside the temple. He's not even allowed to go in the temple because of his defect. But now, because of Jesus' involvement in his life, he becomes a counselor to the Pharisees. He says, okay, guys, here's how I figure it. Jesus must be a prophet of God, probably the greatest one we've ever seen. He said, oh, how I love that word, seen. The greatest one we've ever seen. And they say, wrong, you're so wrong. Okay, start at the beginning again. What happened? What did he do? And the not blind guy gets a little snarky here. He says, okay, you want me to tell you what he did? In verse 27, he said, I told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too? And they said, no, we have come to the conclusion that Jesus is bad. Which reminds me that many people say they've reached a conclusion when all they really did was get tired of thinking. This man, who could now see straight, he was looking straight at these proud, intellectual, powerful movers and shakers. He was looking right at them, and he said, I can see by the disdain on your faces you think that Jesus is nothing, but if he was nothing, how can I see you standing there thinking that? And in their anger, they threw him out. They yelled and kicked him out. Do you know the line that he who yells first admits that he lost the argument? When they lost, they tossed him out. They kicked him out of Jewishness. In one day, he had gone from being a blind Jew to being a sighted non-Jew. This day, this guy was healed by Jesus, was his best day ever and his worst day ever. Can I just slip in one line here about how that will be true for you too? Following Jesus is great. It is what you were made to do. You will be glad you're doing it. But following Jesus is also really painful sometimes because we live in a messed up world with people who don't understand. Sure, he could see, but he also got left unprotected by his parents and excommunicated by his church that day. Later, Jesus found this guy and said, so, are you in? Are you going to follow God's guy who's going to fix the world? And the blind man looked at Jesus and said, if you point me to him, I'm all in. And Jesus smiled and tapped his chest and said in verse 37, you have now seen him. In fact, he's the one speaking with you. The man then said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. Here's another story under the category of this guy probably wishes he had a flashlight. It happened in Beaver, Pennsylvania. His name's James Babcock. He's 38 years old. He decided to burglarize a home one night. He waited for a very dark night. There was no moon. He waited until the people left the house. He broke into the storage space above the garage by putting his fist through the window. He's barely begun to burgle, and he's already bleeding. He sneaks into the second floor of the garage, but in the pitch blackness, he did not see that there was a big hole in the middle of the floor, and he fell through, landing on the first floor below. Now he's bruised and bleeding. In the garage, it was very dark. Do you know how some garages used to be built with a grease pit in the floor where you could work on the underside of the car while standing up in this pit? Well, this garage had one, but James Babcock didn't know that until he stepped into it, and he fell in and he split his head open. Now he's really bleeding. But he climbs out of that pit and he makes his way to the house. He had to break another window. He climbed inside. He promptly fell down the cellar stairs. By then, he has had enough with this house. So he goes back to his car, but he can't find his keys. He figures he lost them in the garage. He goes back to the garage where he thinks he might have dropped his keys, and while looking for them, he fell back into the grease pit. He can't find his keys anywhere in the garage or in the house. He goes back to his car, and while he's checking under the seats for his keys, he accidentally releases the parking brake, and the car starts to roll downhill. He jumped in and tried to steer, but he ran right into a tree, where the police found him unconscious with his head, bleeding head resting on the steering wheel and the car's horn blaring. He had stolen nothing. He pled guilty to criminal mischief, and the judge said 1 year probation, because the judge said, in his opinion, Mr. Babcock had probably suffered enough already. The moral of the story, when you can't see, you are at a great disadvantage in life. So the question in John chapter 9 is really, who's blind? And I have 3 points here today that are pretty clear. I think you'll see. Number one, point one. We live in a world where there's visible and invisible. Jesus said in verse 39, "For judgment I have come into the world, so that the blind will see, and that those who see will become blind." Some Pharisees who were with him heard Jesus say that, and they asked, "What, are we blind too?" And Jesus said, "If you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains." Jesus just proved that he can fix eyes that don't work. That's something Jesus can do. But the thing he can't do in this story, or in any story, is help people who can't see that they need help. As the judge, Jesus said, "If you will admit you're blind, I can make you good. But if you refuse to admit that, it's going to stay dark." Do you remember Jesus' line from the Beatitudes about seeing? In Matthew 8, Jesus said, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." Jesus says the only way to see God, what he's doing, what he wants, what he's like, the only way to do that is to have a pure heart so that you can see. Have you ever been to Mammoth Caves in Kentucky? Do you know Mammoth Caves? They are deep underground caves that you can tour. Our family went when I was growing up, and we headed down lots of steps, and we were following the guide. You have to twist and turn a lot. Sometimes you have to walk in single file. Sometimes you go on a very narrow ledge, and you have to be very careful because it's very far to the bottom off the drop. Our family especially liked one very narrow passageway where you all had to turn sideways to get through. It's called Fat Man's Misery. But at one point, the guide, while we were down there under the earth, a couple miles deep, said he was going to turn off the lights, and he warned us that we would not be able to see our hand in front of our face. And we said, "Yeah, right." And then he did, and we couldn't. And it was scary, and then he waited for an extra long time before he turned the lights back on. And when we realized that without light, we would never be able to get out of there, when he finally turned the lantern back on, we all felt much better. You might say we felt lighter. Not being able to see severely limits your ability to do life well or to do life at all. Jesus says if your heart's not pure, you can't see God. You can't see. You must have a pure heart. And if you're saying, "Well, okay, count me out," that's great. Because the only people who can have a pure heart are the ones who know they need one. You can't make your own heart pure, just like the blind man couldn't make his own eyes see. But God's got plenty of new, pure hearts to hand out. In fact, he's got one for every person. But he never does heart transplants unless the patient schedules it. And the only one who can ask God to do that are people who admit that they need God to do that. So if you're worried that your heart's not pure, great, because you're exactly right. Your heart's not pure, but it can be made that way. You can have a pure, new, clean heart in life. If you'll ask God for it. New hearts were not available until Jesus did what he did on the cross. But after that, there were 3,000 transplants the first day the offer went public. Acts chapter 2 says those who accepted Peter's message were baptized, and about 3,000 were added to their number that day. And if 3,000 people today would do what those people did that day, God would do today what he did that day. He gives out pure hearts for people. He gives out pure hearts so that people can see God, which is so important. Because there's more to life than can be seen. 1 Timothy 1 talks about God, eternal, immortal, invisible. Romans 1 talks about God's invisible qualities, his eternal power, his divine nature. Colossians 1 tells us that Jesus is the image of the invisible God, that all things were created by him, things in heaven on earth, things that are visible and things that are invisible, all created by him and for him. The Bible says that all you can see with your eyes is not all that there is to be seen. Do you remember when Elisha was surrounded, the prophet in the Old Testament was surrounded by enemies? There was a contract out for Elisha. And there were SWAT units surrounding him. During the night, while he slept, black ops from the enemies encircled the city of Dothan in 2 Kings 6. Do you remember that story? And Elisha's assistant woke up early for an early morning jog the next morning. And he came sprinting back into the tent, panicking, saying, "Elisha, wake up, wake up, wake up. We're going to die." And the prophet said, "Don't be afraid." And the assistant said, "We're totally surrounded by armies out there." And Elisha said, "Those who are with us are more than those who are against us." And Elisha's assistant said, "Yeah, us and what army?" At which point Elisha prayed for his friend. And he said in 2 Kings 6:17, "Open his eyes, Lord, so that he can see." Then the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he looked, and he saw hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around. kind of like us when the guy turned the lantern back on, Elisha's assistant suddenly felt much better about the whole situation. They were surrounded by chariots of fire, invisible chariots and horses. When the enemy attacked that day, Elisha prayed that God would blind the whole army, and God did. And Elisha led the whole enemy army inside the castle walls. They couldn't see, they just followed. And then God removed their blindfolds, and the enemy army realized they were trapped behind enemy lines. And then, in one of the most interesting twists in the whole Bible, do you know what Elisha asked the king to do to all those people, all that enemy army? No, you have to look it up yourself. I don't have time, sorry. It's a good one, though. 2 Kings 6. And you would find out what happened. The point is, there is a visible side of the universe and an invisible side of the universe. There's a part that you can see with your cornea and retina and optic nerve and your occipital cortex. And there's a part that you can only see in a different way. But it's really there. Jesus warned that some people, though seeing, do not see. And that'll stop you from doing life well if you can't see. Physical sight is great. Physical sight is important. You should thank God for it. Physical sight is good. Being able to see matters. Did you hear about Tiger Woods when he met the blind golfer? Tiger Woods met a blind golfer once, and the golfer, blind guy, said, "I'm pretty good at golf too." And Tiger was skeptical, but he said nothing. The blind guy said, "No, really, when I tee off, I have a guy call to me from the green, and I have such a keen sense of hearing, I can aim by listening to his voice." That impressed Tiger, and the blind man suggested that they should play around sometime. And Tiger agreed, that would be fun. And the blind guy said, "And to make it interesting, how about if we play for like $100,000? And Tiger said, "Oh, I couldn't play against you for $100,000. I mean, you're blind. That wouldn't be fair." But the guy insisted. And Tiger finally said, "Okay, it's your money, $100,000. Where and when?" And the blind guy said, "I will meet you on any course you want at midnight tonight." Seeing matters. LASIK surgery, so good. Reading glasses, so helpful. Contacts, don't lose them. Sunlight, don't golf without it. Flashlights, don't break into homes without one. Making the visible world visible, seeing what can be seen with your eyes is great, but spiritual sight, according to Jesus, is even more important. Can you see? What scares me most is that parents routinely spend thousands of dollars improving their kids' eyesight, but the same parents don't seem to care or notice that their kids are spiritually blind. Their kids are running into walls, falling into pits, missing the beauty, embracing the ugly, all apparently because they can't see straight, and the parents don't do anything about it. I am so glad that our kids, my kids, have good eyes. But if the choice was between physical or spiritual sight, that wouldn't be a hard choice for me to make. If Carice and Jess have bad eyes, but they see life clearly, eventually Jesus will fix their eyes. But if they can't see Jesus well, 70 years of hurt is all they'll ever get to see. And that's something I don't think I could bear. Point one, there are those who can see and there are those who can't. There are only two kinds of people in the world, really. Those who can see and those who can't, and Jesus is the difference. Point two, if you find yourself with a really messed up life and Jesus says, go wash, jump in the water. Do what Jesus says to do, however that seems to you. That's all. Point three. Well, this guy in John chapter 9, who is blind from birth, who's never seen anything before, because Jesus healed his eyes, this guy realized who Jesus was and he worshiped him. So when he talked to other blind people, do you think that he said anything about Jesus? Like maybe Jesus fixed my eyes, he could fix your eyes too? When this guy's telling this story, like he must have done 10,000 times in his life, when he's talking to people, whoever he's talking to, don't you think he always ended his story by saying, Jesus is so great, you got to check him out? Whenever people in Scripture are overwhelmed by what Jesus has done for them, they include Jesus in their conversations from then on. When you're grateful, when he's made you good, when you know that, you just want to pass it on. Ever it has been, ever it will be. Point three is, it's fun to help others see what you see. I told you today about some people who have had a hard time seeing. Let me finish with a story about a young man with a pure heart and a really clear vision for what matters in life. Thank you for listening. This is the last story. Hang in there. A mom took a family to a restaurant for lunch, and before they all ate, the six-year-old at the table asked if he could pray. And he said, "God is great. God is good. Thank you for the food. And I thank you even more if Mom gets us ice cream for dessert. And liberty and justice for all. Amen. That's what he said. Several people sitting nearby overheard that and had your reaction. Little smiles, little chuckles. But one lady sitting at a table nearby said, "That's what's wrong with this country. Kids don't even know how to pray, asking God for ice cream. Why, I never." And when the little boy heard that, he started to cry. He said, "Oh, Mom, did I do it wrong? Is God mad at me?" And the mom just hugged him and assured him that he had done a terrific job and God was certainly not mad at him. An elderly man at a different table came over and stooped down and said, "Son, I happen to know that God thought that was a great prayer." And the six-year-old said, "Really?" And the old man said, "Cross my heart." And then in a whisper loud enough to be heard by the lady he was talking about, the old man said, "Too bad she never asked God for ice cream. A little ice cream is good for the soul sometimes." Well, of course, the mother bought ice cream for her kids at the end of that meal. But after staring at his for a minute, the boy did something that the people sitting there will never forget. He picked up his sundae and without a word walked over and placed it in front of the woman with a big smile, said, "Here, this is for you. Ice cream is good for the soul sometimes, and my soul's good already." Is yours? Have you asked Jesus for a pure heart? Has he opened your eyes to see? Can you see spiritual stuff that's happening all around you? Can you see God doing stuff in you, through you, for you? Can you say, "Once I was blind, but now I can see"? If so, folks, let it show. If so, tell people what you know. If so, light the path that people can go. If you've been given something great, say so. But if you have not yet ever, if you do not follow Jesus, if you have not bet your life on him yet, if you have not asked him to help you see life like he can open your eyes to see, we are really hoping today that this will be the day that you do that. And you can. If you want. And some of us here have been praying that November 2023 would be the month where a whole bunch of people ask Jesus to help them see better. Because our souls are already good. And we want yours to be too. So, yes? Let's pray.